You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Oregonian Sports Podcast. I am Bill Oram, joined by Brenna Green. Brenna, what's going on today?
Oh, you know, just a few things. Just a few things happening right now in the Pacific Northwest in terms of sports. How are you?
I'm good. For people who are tuning in this week, and maybe missed last week's show, notably, not Aaron Fentress here. This is sort of like when they swapped out Darren's on Bewitched or the mom on Family Matters, or when Buckingham Palace switched out Kate Middleton's and hoped we wouldn't notice. Same thing. Also, I'd like to note that nobody told me this show was on YouTube. So last week, disheveled, weird angle, looking up my nostrils. Nobody told me. Nobody bothered commenting. Now I know it's on YouTube. So I put on my podcasting hat, my podcasting shirt. I did some work on the facial hair to accentuate my podcasting mustache. But we're here now, and I know what we're up to. So we're in much better position this week. Let's call last week a soft launch, and now we are here. This is the grand opening of the Brenna and Bill version of the Oregonian Sports Podcast.
And I'm actually wearing like a nice outfit, not a sweatshirt and TV makeup this time, but that's not because I figured out this was on YouTube. That's just because I have to. So anyways, because I'm going straight to work after this. So there we go. But you know, for those of you listening, it doesn't matter.
Get but to if you're YouTube, watching, apparently. Great.
Yeah.
Brenna, the first thing we have to start with, it is the start of the NCAA tournament this week, and there's a lot happening locally. You know, a week ago, 10 days ago, we thought we were probably gonna have one local team participating in March Madness. The Oregon State women have been a lock for a long time. They're a three seed. But we ended up getting the UP women, which we talked about last week, which was a nice surprise title run in WCC. And I think the most surprising team in the field would be the Oregon men, who entered the Pac-12 tournament last week as the four seed, ended up beating UCLA, Arizona, and Colorado to get to the NCAA tournament. Brenna, before I get your thoughts on this, I just want to sort of highlight what a surprise this was by sharing a clip from last week's episode of the show.
Oh,
so go ahead and just everybody listen to this.
This is great producing.
Thank you.
I feel like there needs to be a change. I feel like there needs to be a change. I'm sorry. I feel like it's time, personally.
Brenna, that was you saying
it was
that there needs to be a change in Eugene. The University of Oregon needs to get rid of longtime head coach Dana Altman, because whatever he's doing down there is not working any longer. Would you like to react to those comments?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the body of work over the season, I still think it's one of those things where coming into last week, there was, I mean, I'm not the only Oregon fan. Like, I guess I wouldn't claim myself, term myself to be an Oregon fan in this instance, but somebody who follows Oregon who was kind of like, what's going on here? Like, it might be time. It's, you know, I mean, Dana even mentioned it today in his press conference, his opening press conference at the NCAA tournament. He has no players on that team who have tournament experience with him, because Infallidante was injured when he was in it his freshman year. So, you know, it's been a hot minute since this team has been back there. So I don't think that my comments were out of line last week, but I am very, very, very pleasantly surprised and pleased that Oregon made the run that they did. I mean, did you think that was going to happen when we podcasted last week?
No, and I would say this is sort of a little bit of inside baseball, how the sausage is made for our listeners, but we recorded last Friday. Oregon was playing Arizona that evening. So the timing made it a little difficult for us to analyze that game. But I think we both felt very comfortable moving forward with the assumption that they were not going to advance out of the semifinal, given what had happened the last time those two teams played in Tucson. You know, Oregon got absolutely boat raced. So, I mean, I absolutely assumed that they were going to lose that game and be back in the NIT. Let me ask you this then. What is your view of Dana Altman now at Oregon, having seen him pull off those, you know, one really improbable win and then another really impressive one against a Colorado team that had been absolutely surging? Do you think that he is now goated, so to speak, and can be the coach for life? Like, what is your view of him going forward, as, you know, now that you have the context of this run?
No one is the coach for life anywhere. Okay. That's like the number one rule of college sports. he ain't Joe Paterno. Okay. And even that ending didn't go very well, obviously. So, you know, but do I think that he probably added a few more years onto his lifespan there? Yeah, he did. So good work to him. And I mean, a masterful job. Did you watch the video that they put out yesterday from
cinematic? Pac-12? No, yeah, I didn't see it. I didn't see that one.
Okay, so after where they started the recap, I guess, movie, whatever you want to call it, was in the locker room after the semifinal win, and the part that really spoke to me was Dana looking at Infali and Jermaine and saying, and he got like very openly emotional and was like, we have to win this game for these guys. And I don't know if I've ever seen Dana as outwardly emotional in my life like that. He's a pretty like even keeled guy. Mm-hmm. He doesn't get too high. He doesn't get too low. He's just kind of, you know, unless he's upset about fans not being at the NIT games, then apparently he gets really riled up. But, you know, other than that, like, I've never seen him like as outwardly emotional. So I think he did a really good job at the very end of really connecting with his team and really, you know, framing it in a way that rallied everyone. So he has done a phenomenal job so far. And, you know, all of a sudden now this team has momentum, and I would hardly be surprised if they knock off South Carolina on Thursday. What do you think of that matchup?
I think Oregon is going to win that game for a couple of reasons. I don't think that South Carolina has a big who can contend with Infali Dante. I think that the emotion that Jermaine Cousinard is going to bring into that game is going to help the Ducks. You're talking about a sixth-year senior playing his former team, which is really, you know, just juicy and compelling in its own right. You know, I've talked to some coaches who, you know, follow this stuff closely, more closely than I do, or have a better feel for South Carolina. And it just is a matchup that works really, really well for Oregon. So I think there's a reason that you've seen that line kind of jump the fence a couple of times. Nobody's completely sold on South Carolina or Oregon in that game, but to be an 11 seed, you know, playing across the country from home and basically being seen as a toss up against, you know, a team that was, you know, tied for second in the SEC, I think you got to feel pretty good. So I think Oregon's going to represent themselves pretty well. I think Dante has a chance to have another really, really big game. He's been playing great. This matters to him. You know, this is the end of the run for him at Oregon. He's finally getting a shot in the tournament. I think that is going to be a team that is locked in and ready to go.
Yeah, I think that this South Carolina team peaked in like January.
Yeah.
They've been all over the place since, as somebody who, you know, votes in the AP poll. So I kind of have like a snapshot of teams' overall seasons. And yeah, it just hasn't been that great recently for them. So I would not be surprised if Oregon comes in there. And man, Infali Dante, 43 of 49 in the last five games. Yeah. Like how?
Right.
87%. So if he has anything along those lines, this is gonna be a rough night. for rough day, rough night, whatever time it is for South Carolina.
And I would also just point out that Dana Altman has not lost an opening round game since he's been at Oregon. He's 7-0 in the NCAA tournament in the first round, whatever has changed. The vernacular has changed a little bit over the years, but you know,
in the first round
matchup. So Oregon is an 11 seed playing 6-seeded South Carolina. The Oregon State women are a 3-seed playing 14th-seeded Eastern Washington, with the winner of Texas A&M and Nebraska awaiting them in the second round in Corvallis. And the Pilot women are a 13-seed playing 4th-seeded Kansas State in Manhattan, Kansas. Mm-hmm. There are different expectations for all of these teams, right? Yeah. Like the Oregon State women should win both their games and advance to a Sweet 16. Like that would be the expectation for them after
that
the season they've had.
Yep.
The Pilot women probably have no expectations at this point because it was such an unexpected run to begin with.
And they're a 13 seed?
Yeah.
That's crazy to me.
And then anyway, the Oregon men are an 11 seed playing a 6-seeded South Carolina team. And I think that we are sort of establishing that, you know, the expectation or our belief is that they can win a game. That's probably kind of where they are. Which of those three teams do you think has a better chance of exceeding the expectations or surprising based on sort of what we expect for them? And so I would say for Oregon State, it's getting beyond the Sweet 16. For the Pilot women, it's winning a game. For the Oregon men, it's probably getting out of the opening weekend and getting to a Sweet 16. Which of those three teams do you think has the better chance of taking it a step further than we might expect?
I got to give it to the Oregon men, which is a crazy thing for me to say considering the audio you just played. But, you know, Dana Altman and Mark Few have something in common, and that's that they're really reliable in the NCAA tournament the first weekend. That is something that they both have. So, you know, I think that they can do this and make a run. Do I think that they're going to go past a Sweet 16? No, that would be really, really surprising to me. But I do think that they have the people to do it. It's a question of their depth. That's going to be something that's going to be challenged, but they do have 8 players who can play, you know, and in college basketball, you need like 7. So if you've got 8, you can make it work. Their bench is just going to have to show up this game. These next, however many games there are, they're going to have to show up. But yeah, I mean, you know, for the UP women, we'll see what happens. Like you said, this is gravy. This is gravy for them. And then, you know, if they win one game, like, oh gosh,
they're huge,
huge. I do feel that they feel a little bit more confident going into this one. They felt that Oklahoma last year was like a really bad mismatch for them, from what I've been told. So they feel a little bit better, I think, going into this game than last year's game. And then for Oregon State, like, yeah, I think they're definitely going to get out of Corvallis. But once you get to Albany, it's just such a murderer's row once you get to that level. So
Oregon State would be in position likely to face Notre Dame in the Sweet 16.
Yeah.
And then potentially you're looking at South Carolina in the regional final if you could get there. So
they could win against Notre Dame. South Carolina, I'm not you know, play this audio back in a few weeks when they beat South Carolina, but that's a real tough matchup for them.
Yeah. I think I would answer the question the same way as you, just because I think Oregon State Notre Dame feels like a tough hurdle for the Beavers. We'll know more about them after this weekend. I didn't think that we learned a ton about them in the last weekend of the regular season once they got Reagan Beers back, and then in the Pac-12 tournament, you know, I thought they performed really well against Stanford, just ran out of steam down the stretch.
Yeah.
You know, needed that double overtime win to beat Colorado in the opening round. Opening round for them, not Colorado.
Yeah.
But the Oregon men, I think they are the only thing that I have that worries me about the Oregon men is they are not a great 3-point shooting team. In fact, they were abysmal during the Pac-12 tournament. I think they were 13 of 60. And so if they are not able to jump on either South Carolina or Creighton, if they were to get there early, it you know, might be hard for them to crawl back against teams of that caliber, although they did against Arizona and Colorado. I do think that Oregon has momentum right now. I think they are peaking. And, you know, I mean, McDermott at Creighton, you know, is smart enough to figure out the defensive things that Oregon has been able to do. I mean, Oregon has been playing really well defensively, especially if they can keep Dante, you know, close to the rim. I think Creighton is a tougher matchup, but I think, you know, you've got two of the best coaches, two of the best basketball minds in college basketball facing off if Oregon gets there in Greg McDermott and Dana Altman. So I'd love to see it. Obviously it's Dana Altman's former school. We'll be talking about that a lot if it comes to that. So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. You know, it was really interesting. Dana Altman admitted, I forget after what game it was, but he admitted that he'd been teaching zone defense wrong to this team during the Pac-12 tournament. And I was like, man, I want to know more about that. Like, what did you change in how you were teaching it? Because all of a sudden it's working. So I'd love to know what you flipped, because he straight up said, he's like, you know, some of it's on me. I haven't been teaching the zone right. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. But yeah, I mean, today in his opening press conference, Dana Altman was asked about Creighton and he was already like kind of emotional about it. And yeah. It was just like, I really don't want to have to deal with this. It made me like, that's going to be really tough for me if I'm put in that position. So, yeah, imagine what it's actually going to be like if we actually do get to that point. So he is on the record already saying he is not looking forward to that potential matchup if it were to happen.
Yeah. Okay. I want to turn your attention to something that dropped today on ESPN.com. If you have had a chance to read it or not, I mean, it's 17,000 words, so probably not. But Wright Thompson, the great magazine writer at ESPN, dropped a lengthy story on Caitlin Clark, basically chronicling her run through Iowa and a lot on this season and kind of her, you know, kind of coming of age as, you know, as the face of college basketball. It's, you know, there's a lot of great stuff in there. One particular thing I want to turn your attention to, though, because it's just a little bit of a reminder of something that we knew and comes up from time to time. But when she was choosing her school, here it is in the story, I'm quoting, her list of choices winnowed to two, the Hawkeyes and the Fighting Irish. She'd also looked at Iowa State, Texas, and both Oregon schools. This is not new. I mean, if you look at like old recruiting stories, it says that she, you know, had considered Oregon and Oregon State and that she was recruited by both. But, you know, there are people who will tell you that, you know, that you know, I've heard more Oregon State, but I mean, we're also talking about kind of during the Sabrina era as well. I'm curious, as we look back on this now, and Caitlin Clark is obviously a larger than life figure, and she is, you know, obviously completely intertwined with the Iowa Hawkeyes program, but, where would you have liked to have seen her more if she had come to the Beaver State? Do you think it would have been more fun to see her at Oregon or Oregon State? Can you differentiate those things? What would have been better for her? How do you react to those things?
I think it would have been cool to see her at Oregon just because of the Sabrina comparison. Like, that would have been really fun to watch, you know, hey, like she's taken down all these records from Sabrina and it would have been right after Sabrina. So that would have like just flowed right into it and just kind of kept up that lineage. So I think that would have been really fun to watch if I'm being honest with you, just because like I said, you kind of have that. There is, and I'm totally blanking on what it is, but there is some sort of connection between Caitlin Clark and Oregon State, like her family in Oregon State, that kind of got her interested, I believe, anyways. And I can't remember what it was for the life of me. Anyways, but yeah, like those, it was definitely something that was explored back in the day. But yeah, no, neither of them happened. But yeah, I think I have to go Oregon just because of Sabrina, because that would have flowed so nicely together, you know. But oh well, sure. What do you think?
I don't know. I was thinking about this, and that's why I like asking the questions, is because like hopefully you forget to throw it back to me so I don't have to answer it. Something about the idea of, I mean, obviously, like in this moment you would say Oregon needs her more, right? Oregon could use the help. You know, she would have come at a time, I mean, when Kelly was bringing in, you know, he had the five-star recruits that was that same class or the class right after her. there would have been a lot of talent. And I think that, you know, that's one of the things that Oregon ran into, where they had almost, you know, too many mouths to feed in that exact moment. And then of course COVID, and it just sort of all, it was just a weird time. And so all those, you know, all those five-star players ended up leaving. So, I mean, I think it's reasonable to ask, and this is true of anyone going anywhere anymore, but like, would she have stayed because of the exodus we saw at Oregon? You like to think so. And the idea of her kind of taking the baton from Sabrina, but I think it's a really tough act for anyone to follow what Sabrina did. And, you know, Caitlin Clark is maybe the one person who could have done it, but Sabrina is such a singular figure there that it almost feels like sacrilege to say that somebody would have come in right after her and one-upped her, you know, because what Caitlin Clark has done, you know, Sabrina was never the all-time scorer, right? That was Kelsey Plum. But like the idea that, that Sabrina might have been overshadowed by someone coming in right after her is just really hard to believe. As a game day experience, when Gil is rocking, it is just, I mean, it's a much worse gym. It is everything, right? Like Matthew Knight is a cathedral, and Gil is very old, and it feels very old. But the idea of Caitlin Clark playing her home games in that like old, you know, fieldhouse style gym does feel just much more
college-y.
Like that feels like it would just be a lot of fun, as opposed to, you know, an arena that is, you know, not all that different from like, you know, a pro arena somewhere. So I think that the experience and atmosphere might have been better at Oregon State. But I mean, imagine the lines at Oregon State, you know, in a 9,000 person, you know, Gil Coliseum, trying to get in to see Caitlin Clark. The tickets are already out of control, and people are just, you know, lined up for however far, however long to get one of those hard ass benches, you know, at the very top. Like the building is literally sweating at the top of Gil Coliseum when it gets close to full. It would be hot, it'd be humid, it'd be miserable, and it would be incredible. So I think there's something about like that scene that I would have loved to have seen as well. So I'd probably skew a little bit Oregon State. You're obviously going Oregon, which is good. We disagree.
We disagree.
It's good when we disagree.
It would have turned into like a bigger version of St. Mary's when Gonzaga comes into town. Mm-hmm. If you've ever been to McKeon Pavilion when Gonzaga comes into town, let me tell you, it is an experience, and fire marshal laws and rules do not exist in that gym. Anyways, it would have been a nicer version of that, I would say. Let's put it that way.
No, we never saw it, never got to see it, but we didn't. Fun to dream. And obviously, I mean, you know, Caitlin Clark wrapping up her career, you know, heading to the WNBA draft, one of the greatest we've ever seen do it. I would also like to highlight that before Caitlin Clark was the all-time leading scorer, the women's all-time leading scorer, obviously Kelsey Plum before her, but before her, do you remember who it was, Brenna Green? It's important to highlight this.
Yes. No, please. I you're going to say her name and I'm going to kick myself. So just go with it.
So the holder of the women's career scoring mark for a long time was none other than Jackie Stiles at Southeast Missouri State, who then was drafted by the Portland Fire and spent 2 years up the Portland Fire. And you know what one of Jackie Stiles' other claims to fame is, Brenna Green of Coin 6 News.
Please tell me.
She was one of the early guests on the Oregonian Sports Podcast. Back in the Sports by Northwest days, in the fall of 2022, Jackie Stiles joined me on this very podcast.
Jackie Stiles, one of Brenna Green's childhood heroes right there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Number 10 for the Portland Fire.
Yeah. That was right when I started playing basketball, and I had a friend whose mom worked for Adidas, so she'd take us to games all the time, and I lost my mind over Jackie Stiles. I think at one point I did have a Jackie Stiles bobblehead, and I have no idea where that has disappeared off into the world, and it makes me sad that that somehow got legs and walked away from me at some point. So
Jackie Stiles was the original ponytail assassin.
Yes.
Did do a documentary that came out in 2022, which is why we were talking to her at that time, but it was also kind of amid some of the momentum for the WNBA to Portland. And so, you know, we had a great conversation with her. You can go find that in your podcast archive. If you didn't have a chance to listen to that one, that was a lot of fun from way back in the day. Brenna, there was a big shakeup in the athletic department, not so far from where you and I are sitting, just a few hours north up Interstate 5.
Yeah.
What do you make of Troy Dannon, the brand spanking new athletic director of the University of Washington Huskies, leaving that job 6 months into it.
Five months into it to take the same position
at the University of Nebraska.
What a thing to wake up to this morning. I mean, I roll over, I'm like, ugh. It's like 7:30. I'm just going to check my phone real quick and then fall back to sleep. And I open up Twitter for 5 seconds and I'm like, I'm up, baby. We're ready to go. Like, here we go. I mean, just what? But I'm also like not surprised. I'm not surprised for a few reasons. The only thing that does surprise me, which I find to be particularly egregious in this whole thing, is he had to have had some sort of inkling that this might be a possibility for him. And he goes and fires their head basketball coach still. Like, that's bad. And so now, you know, they can't hire a new head basketball coach until they find a new athletic director. Like, those are hires that athletic directors have to make because they want to come in and make their own hires and have their own guys in there. They don't, you know, this can't be a situation where an interim athletic director can go hire that job. Like, that's just, it's not how this works. Yeah. It's not how this goes. And so now they're going to have to, I find it to be pretty deplorable, to be honest with you. Like, you firing your head coach and then leaving 5 seconds later. That's really, really messed up to me. And he had to have known that this was a possibility because I had a source tell me, and I'm pretty sure this is true, that it's the same hiring firm who hired him at UW who also hired him at Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Like, that's so messed up on so many different levels.
Yeah, it's a very incestuous dynamic with all these jobs. And
it is.
And I think the thing that I mean, first of all, I mean, to be a Husky fan in 2024, you've got your
a real trip.
Yeah, my God. National championship game appearance. Lose your football coach, Alabama.
And then lose your AD.
Didn't have a chance to really get to know Troy Dannon at Washington, but he wasn't there long enough. One thing I will say about this situation, I think you made some really, really good points. I mean, they're obviously in a difficult spot. Why is that not a more appealing job? Like, why don't people want to stay there? There's been some chatter that administration is really tough on athletic directors and on the athletic department in general. You know, certainly Anna Marie Cauchy, is that how you say her name? The president?
I've always read more than said out loud.
So. Apologies. Yeah. I mean, I didn't think she came off looking particularly well in the investigation the Seattle Times did that sort of revealed a lot of her backroom negotiating during the Big Ten, Pac-12 dissolution. And, you know, obviously Jen Cohen leaves that job, USC. I don't think a lot of people, I mean, you understand leaving Washington for SB, but, you know, her replacement doesn't make it, you know, like you said, to the 6 month mark. The other thing that I would like to highlight here, have you been to Lincoln, Nebraska?
I have not had the pleasure. No.
So I haven't either. And I feel a little guilty about assigning certain characteristics to a city that I've never been to or judging a city I've never been to.
Yeah.
'Cause it sounds like a great college town. People love living there. I'm sure the quality of life is fantastic. I'm sure if you are the head of, you know, Nebraska athletics in Lincoln, you are, you know,
God,
king of the mountain. So it's probably a great place to raise your family, especially when you have a ton of money and you are, you know, the biggest shot on campus. That said, this man went from New Orleans, Louisiana, the greatest city in America, to Seattle, a top five city in America, to Lincoln, Nebraska, again, a place I've never been to and I feel a little bad talking smack on, but for the purpose of this podcast, I will gladly engage in. Does this man have any taste?
Oh, gosh. It's certainly a choice. I mean, Maybe, you know, the other thing I hypothesized on Twitter is maybe he saw those books for UW because their athletic department is not in a great place financially and thought to himself, I didn't make this mess and I don't feel like cleaning it up.
Yeah.
So in that case, I mean, you know, maybe.
But,
maybe,
but that is what he signed up for. That was all true exactly. when he took the job.
He knew. So. He knew. But you never know. You can get in different positions and be like, yeah, I'm out. Yeah. But yeah, no, I mean. Yeah, that's a pretty rough transition. Feel for, I believe he has children.
Mm-hmm.
Feel for those kids. That's an experience. Hey, we're going from New Orleans to Seattle to Lincoln in 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
Rough for those kids.
It's worth noting that he previously worked at the University of Northern Iowa for a long time, which is probably a lot more like Lincoln, Nebraska than it is New Orleans, Louisiana, or Seattle, Washington. That said, just a lot of interesting layers to that one. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens at UW. I mean, in the middle of this, you know, historic transition that a lot of schools are making this year out of the dissolving Pac-12, but now into the Big Ten, UW is not only going in, you know, with new faces atop the football program, eventually the basketball program, now the total athletic department. This is not how you want to, you know, make your grand arrival.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to throw a curveball at you. I didn't have this on our rundown, but I wanted to highlight this. Our Aaron Fentress, my colleague, caught up with Damian Lillard briefly this week in the wake of Dame sitting courtside at Blazers Bulls, a rematch of the 1992 NBA Finals.
Thank you.
Were you alive
that.
For the 1992 NBA Finals?
Barely. I was 5 months old.
What do you remember?
Not much, but there is a picture of me in a Blazers onesie, so I do have that.
That is legitimate street cred. So I get, you know, obviously there were people who got excited. There was just obviously a reaction to Dame being courtside at a Blazers game in Chicago. Aaron Fentress sussed out the details. Obviously, Dame had a couple of days off. He's obviously close friends with a lot of Blazers people, none more so than Anthony Simons. He and DeMar DeRozan are good friends, share an agent. Did you have anything you wanted to add to the discourse around Dame being courtside at a Blazers game?
I mean, it's not surprising. I was like, oh, that's
cool.
Do you
think he regrets? Do you think he regrets leaving? Like, things haven't gone exactly smoothly in Milwaukee. Do you think that he is yearning for his Portland days?
No. I'm sorry. You put Dame on this team. What exactly changes that makes this into a contender?
Well, I think this team would have been built differently throughout that summer, but you're right. They still wouldn't be a contender because they were not in a position to make the moves that would have made them a contender.
I think that Dame, I mean, he has made it very, very clear that he wants to retire a Blazer. He's made that explicitly clear, even if he still allegedly is not talking to Joe Cronin. But, you know, we'll see how that all plays out. So, he's made that clear. I think he still wants to remain close to the organization. Like you said, he has friends all over. So I'm pretty sure Phil Beckner, his trainer, was with him courtside. Mm-hmm. It sure looked like him.
Yep, and, Phil was there.
So Phil was, you know, Phil's got a lot of connections. He also trains Anthony. So this was a situation where I think it was just like, the stars all align and he felt like going and seeing the Blazers. But do I think that he wishes he was a Blazer? Ultimately, no, because at the end of the day, he wants what he wants and he had to make sacrifices in order to get to that, which nobody can blame him for. Nobody can blame him for wanting to get a ring. No one. And it was not going to happen here. It just wasn't. Not in the near future anyway. So, it was cool to see him there. Didn't raise my eyebrows at all. I was like, oh, okay, that's relatively close. That's fine. That makes sense. He wants to see his friends. End of story. And
I just think we're at an interesting age in the NBA. You know, I don't even know what to really do with it, but it's just like, it's just the sort of thing you're just not really accustomed to seeing. Like, I remember, you know, seeing like when Marcus Morris was playing for the Clippers and Markieff was with the Lakers, you know, they would go to each other's games, you know, because they're, I mean, and it made sense. It's the same town. You know, you didn't see a lot of that, you know, Clipper Laker, you know, crossover. Like, I don't recall seeing a lot of, you know, I don't remember seeing Chris Paul go and, you know, sit three rows up to watch Kobe play, you know, home games. But we are just in sort of this age where it's like, I feel like a lot of those, like, kind of, I don't know. I don't know exactly how to put my finger on it, but I just think a lot of those walls and I are coming down. And I think, as we know, like, we're in a time where it's about the people, right? More than like the teams or the laundry of being on different teams. And like, you know, players want to play with players more than they want to play for like teams or organizations or cities. And they want to play with certain people. And so I just think those personal connections have come more and more to the fore in sort of how the NBA operates. So I think that that was maybe just like another small piece of that, but it, I don't know. It was cool. I think it was cool. I think it, you know, we've established that Dame maintains a connection to Portland, obviously, that he wants to stay connected to the fan base, that, you know, the fans of Portland, you know, the fans of Portland never did anything wrong by him, right? Like that, that relationship is still very, very strong. And so, I think it was probably a meaning, it was meaningful for them. And I think, you know, it's meaningful for him to be able to see the people that he cares about with the Blazers. Milwaukee is 90 miles from, Chicago. I've done that drive myself. It's no sweat. So made a lot of sense, but still perked my ears when I heard about it.
Makes sense to me. Makes total sense. I mean, yeah, fun moment. Fun moment.
Brenna Green, you did say on Twitter on Sunday, Twitter, the platform formerly known as X, formerly known as Twitter, now known as Twitter again because nobody calls it X. It's called X, but nobody calls it X.
Correct.
So it's known as Twitter, even though it's called X. This was a lot less confusing before Elon got involved. I just want to be very clear about
as that. Almost literally, I shouldn't say almost, as literally everything that happens when Elon Musk gets involved.
I've seen two Cybertrucks on the mean streets of Southwest Portland in the last week and a half. Are the Cybertrucks coming for us?
You mean like those, like those trucks that like plot geographic, like
no, the Tesla Cybertruck. It's the thing that looks like a DeLorean that is Tesla's latest offering. It's a Cybertruck.
Got it. Okay.
You don't have one? Are you renegotiating your contract at Coin? The next contract needs to involve you getting a Cybertruck.
I will make sure to get that in there. Just for
order
you.
Of operations. Find out what a Cybertruck is. Step two, get one.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I remember what it looks like. And yes, I am all good with not driving a Transformer. I think I'm fine with that. So yeah.
Brenna, you tweeted on Sunday. I'm trying to find it, but I think I can paraphrase. It's going to be fine. Paraphrasing.
Actually, want to know what you responded to me on Instagram?
Was it Instagram?
Yeah, it was.
Did you say it out? Okay, whatever. So it was on Instagram. Okay, I take it back. You said on Instagram, we had a whole conversation about Twitter, X, and Cybertrucks, and it didn't even happen on that platform. It happened on Zuckerberg's Meta. Okay, you grammed that Selection Sunday is the best sports day of the year. Which I said, rank your five best sports days on the calendar. Bring them to this episode of the Oregonian Sports Podcast because we're going to rank them. Do you have five for me?
I don't know if I have five, but I can tell you
there's going to be rules to this. You're not just going to launch into this.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I have a list. Aggressive. And then I have three honorable mentions.
You have a list. Okay. Well, I can tell you right now that really what I meant by that is that Thursday and Friday are the best sports days of the year.
You can't jump right to number one, Brenna.
Okay, I'm sorry. Gonna be rules. I ruined it.
Okay.
Please give me your list. All right.
Well, I was thinking we could go 5-5-4-4-3-3-2-2-1-1.
Okay. All right.
Do you need a second to jot these down?
I'm making it right now, but I will.
Why don't I go ahead and tell you my honorable mentions? These received consideration, but did not make my top five. Mm-hmm. I am a sucker for the home run derby.
Okay, that's interesting.
I like Bill Diggs the long ball. What can I say? The home run derby was iconic for me growing up. Ken Griffey Jr. at Coors Field. It's fun to watch home runs. Everybody dreams of hitting home runs. I like that all stars are the ones doing it. Unlike the NBA, all the all-star weekend events, especially the dunk contest. So I do have a soft spot for the home run derby. I think that's more fun than the all-star game itself in the middle of summer. And then as a former Angelino, I did throw in the Rose Bowl because that is a classic all-timer event. I think you could expand that
a little bit. Yeah. But I feel you.
Yeah. With that, I will start my list if that will.
Yes, please.
Number five for me, this is going to shock people. This is an upset right off the bat because I say that number five is the Super Bowl.
Okay. That's fine with me.
I don't have it higher. What's number five for you? Okay.
Yeah, we'll go Super Bowl at number five. I'm kind of like making a list as we go here, but I actually 100% agree with you. And the reason is a few things. The Super Bowl is more of a corporate event than a game.
Yep.
I enjoy all the hoopla that comes along with it, with the commercials and things like that, but it definitely, it's more so has to do with the events surrounding the event than the actual game involved. So yeah, I can get there.
Yeah. I mean, unless you're a fan of one of the two teams participating, you are in it for the commercials, the food, the party with your friends, which are all great things. But I think it is, it's not as good. It's not as meaningful of a day to the majority of sports fans as some of these other ones, in my opinion, coming up. Do you want to tell me your fourth, or would you like me to keep this order going where I tell you mine and then you can respond?
I think I'm good with going with Selection Sunday is four for me.
Okay.
I'm fine with that. Because it does not actually involve any sporting events that day. So I think it's a fun day. It's a day that there's so much conversation around and, a lot of people are all tuning in for one singular event that really goes on for like 20 minutes. And then there's all this conversation afterwards. So, I am good with going with that as my number four day. I love, like all the live shots and seeing all the teams celebrating and stuff like that. So that's exciting for me. But and as somebody who is just a huge college basketball junkie, I enjoy it. So what say you for number four?
Well, I'll just respond real quick on Selection Sunday and say that I think the case for Selection Sunday is it's almost like the starting pistol of filling out your bracket, right? Like you wait. And then it's like, because one of the great American traditions is filling out your bracket. And so that is the moment where you finally see the bracket and you get to spend the next 3 or 4 days tinkering with it and making your decision. So I think that that is sort of the appeal of Selection Sunday for me. Like their point, you make some great points. Selection Sunday doesn't really do it for me. Just tell me who's in the field and we'll start thinking about it then. But you make some good points. For me, number four, and I could have had this even higher. Number four, I have the Kentucky Derby.
I knew a horse race was going to show up in here.
The Kentucky Derby is, and if there was going to be a horse race to me, it's got to be the Kentucky Derby. And keep in mind, for most of our lives, there had not been a Triple Crown winner. And so I always loved the potential of a Triple Crown winner. And it all started with that first race and these horses that would become, celebrities in their own right, kind of coming out of nowhere. I think there's a lot of it's a 2-minute race and it's just there's so much pageantry, so much buildup. I've personally gotten in the habit in recent years of throwing a Kentucky Derby party, having a big viewing party. It's fun to bet on the race. I mean, I understand that there are concerns about the safety of the horses, and obviously that has been there's been a lot more. I think frankly a real referendum on the oversight of the treatment of horses. Like Santa Anita Park has had a lot of issues. So, I mean, there is the question of the humane treatment of the animals. I don't want to dismiss that, but as an event that we can all gather around that kind of captures the imagination and the collective experience of the sports watching public, I think that I think the Kentucky Derby is the greatest. I was talking to my friend Kyle Goon, who's the sports columnist at the Baltimore Banner, about this today. And he kind of threw out that he's like, it's kind of like the Oscars of sports, because you've got the fashion, you have the food, you want to see what, you know, Taylor Swift is wearing at the Kentucky Derby. Like, is Taylor going to be at the Kentucky Derby this year with Travis Kelce? By the way, that seems like an event they might appear at, maybe. The Kelces will definitely be there. Jason Kelce might even have a shirt on, but that's a big one for me. How about you? What's number three?
Number three. Okay.
I forgot the hats. I said fashion, but I didn't say hats. We got to be really clear. The bourbon, the hats, my Kentucky home. Okay, go ahead with number three.
Thank you so much. Okay, so I am looking. I'm looking at one thing right now because I want to make something clear if it is not as clear. Well, you know, we're going to expand out your Rose Bowl pick to just January 1st in general in college football.
Okay.
Great day. Great day. Like, so much fun. Did they move the semifinals from January 1st?
Yeah, they were on like December 29th this year.
Okay, whatever. We're going to go with that whole span. I don't care. Yeah. I know it's not one day. But in the spirit of this, we're going with that whole span. Okay. I love that. It's what I was born and raised on. My number two pick, I'm telling you right now, is not going to be anywhere close to your top 10. And it's also a friendly and something that is near and dear to my heart. But anyways, so we're going to go with that. So I don't know. It's fun. I wish the bowl season meant more. It has lost some of its luster.
Yeah. I mean, I used to participate in a bowl pool with my uncle, who would gather with his old buddies at the Ray's grocery store in Sisters, Oregon every morning. And they would, in bowl season, they would do a bowl pick'em, and it's all these old guys against each other. And my uncle Bill would enlist me to make the picks. He would pay the $5 entry fee and I would make the picks. And the first year that we participated, when I was like 12, we won the thing. And so that led to my uncle calling me Whiz Kid. It's a nickname that stuck to this day. He's still kicking and getting together with his friends for coffee in the mornings. And we did this thing for like another 20 years and we never won it again, ever. And kept paying the $5. I kept disappointing him. And that pool has stopped, I think, for a variety of reasons. But also, who cares about all these bowl games anymore?
Yeah.
Like, and they're impossible to pick. Like, how could you possibly pick the winner of these games when you don't know who's going to participate? You don't know who's going to care. You don't know who's going to be coaching. The system has just sort of taken so much of the heft out of 80% of the bowl games, 85% of the bowl games.
I think maybe, you know, thinking it through more, maybe now that day is really like the last weekend of the regular season over Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty fun weekend.
That's
where you have
one.
all those rivalry. You know, I'm making an amendum. I'm giving it to that one. That one's fun. There's a lot of rivalry matchups.
Hold on. Brenna just made up a word alert and I'm going to call it out. This is going to be a new feature on the weekly podcast.
Oh, God.
You just combined amendment and addendum to create amendum. And well, I like it. That is now part of the Oregonian sports podcast lexicon.
I was going to say lexicon too.
A real word.
A real word.
But we are going to use amendum going forward. Thank you, Brenna, for that one.
Sounds good.
Number right, three for me. If it's your thing, it's great. If not, you probably don't care. I really enjoy opening day. I like having baseball on in the summer. I think opening day of... I pageantry, you know, a lot of, you know, red, white, and blue bunting. You know, there's occasionally some bunting also on the field. And there are a few of these for me, but things that make me feel like it is spring or summer, they make me feel warm. I mean, not physically because of the sun, but like warm and fuzzy. And the arrival of baseball season makes me feel like we've kind of made it through the winter. There's a lot of tradition with that. Opening day, I'm a romantic for. So that is my number three. I don't think we need to spend a ton of time on it, but
not my thing, but I'm glad you like it.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
Number two, the one that is nowhere near my top 10, so say you.
once again, we're kind of fudging this a little bit and going with a few days in a row, but it happens once every 4 years and I love it every time. And it is the figure skating finals at the Olympics. Okay. I watch them like I'm watching a football game. There really should be a camera on me. I love them. I grew up ice skating. So like I said, it's the once every 4 years Super Bowl. I love watching every single one. And I very much enjoy it. If you make me pick one day, it's got to be the female and the finals for the females. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's, yeah, like I said, nowhere near your top 10, but a stretch of events that I personally love. So
you don't know that's nowhere near my top 10. What if that's my number one? So are you a Tara Lipinski person, a Michelle Kwan, Sarah Hughes?
Tara was the one that was Tara winning the Olympics is like one of my first memories. And then I bothered my mom for pretty much 4 years to let me ice skate, and she wouldn't do it. And then finally, when she took me out on the ice, apparently every time I fell, I'd just fall down and then I'd pop up and I'd go, I'm okay, mom, I'm okay, I can do this. And then she was like, I'm not getting out of this, am I? So there you go. But yes, I grew up in the age, I mean, Tara was the first one that got me into it. And then Michelle Kwan is, you know, very serendipitous with my childhood, or not serendipitous, very
synonymous with your
childhood. Synonymous. There we go. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to come back next week with where you combine serendipitous and synonymous into a word that we can add.
I was trying to do that as well. So yeah.
Okay, my number two is the Sunday of the Masters.
Okay, okay.
Again, big spring summer sports guy over here.
Yes,
but there is something about that chase for the first major of the season. I'm not a huge golf guy. I'm not the guy sitting around watching the Players last week. I don't really play golf. It's certainly not well, but infrequently even as it is. But there is just something about, you know, that Sunday of the Masters at Augusta. Again, the pageantry, the legacy of it all, the romance.
My man loves some pageantry. That's the number one theme.
And then you know, like, I have really fond memories, as I'm sure you do, and you know, 97% of you know, sports fans, of Tiger Woods, you know, on a Sunday at the Masters, you know, red polo flapping in the wind, you know, as he's got his, you know, his caddy right there. It's great. So I mean, that one, I'll always tune in for Sunday of the Masters, even though I'm not a huge golf guy. Love that one. Leave me alone on Sunday of the Masters.
I already revealed my number one.
I want to test our producing here. Kelly Doyle, who runs our podcasts here at the Oregonian Oregon Live. Kelly, if you're listening, I would like you to insert a drum roll here, please. Pause for drum roll. There it is. Okay, Brenna, your number one sports day of the year is?
It's Thursday and Friday. This should be a national holiday. Nobody should have to work these days. There's a reason why a boss button was invented, so that their people's screens could be hidden from their bosses when they walk in because they're watching March Madness. This is a great day in America. Production goes down, sports watching goes up. It is the 2 days that are David versus Goliath. There's always great storylines that come out of them. We always have great games. I just don't know how you pick any other day than Thursday and Friday. Like I said, we should just have a national holiday. I know people say there should be a national holiday the day after the Super Bowl. No, there should be a national holiday Thursday and Friday. Your pick.
For me, it's the finals of the figure skating at the Winter Olympics every 4 years.
I hate you.
No, it's Thursday. It's Thursday. It's not Friday, by the way. And Friday's great, too.
Really?
Friday's delivered some of the best games. But on Thursday morning, when we all wake up, we all still have a perfect bracket.
It's like Christmas.
It's just our brackets are perfect, pristine, and then the disasters start coming, and there's Farley Dickinson, there's Norfolk State, there's George Mason. You're pulling your hair out. It's absolute chaos. It is the most gripping and compelling day of sports. And by the way, to hell with these coaches, these blue blood coaches and administrators, Greg Sankey, Tom Izzo, who are saying that we need to somehow dilute that product and create a clearer path for for the high major programs to advance and take away the variability that makes it so great. It is great. And it is such a great microcosm of the things that we root for in life. You know, the yep. David versus Goliath of it all, the unexpected run, you know, the team or person who was not meant to succeed or was not expected to succeed, captivating everyone's hearts and minds. It is, if we could somehow infuse the purity of the opening day of the NCAA tournament, men's and women's, with the rest of the sports calendar, the world would be a better place. I actually think that we are all better people when we are unified around the NCAA tournament. It is one of the last vestiges of monoculture
yes.
in American society. And I say, figure out how to keep things more pure, create more pathways for the teams that are not supposed to win. The college football playoff is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, but the best football playoff is at the FCS that is a 24-team playoff. 24 teams is the number. James Crepia is probably listening to this going absolutely insane right now, but I'm telling you, it is pure. It is probably something that we are going to lose in some form because we are losing all the good things, Brenna. But right now, we still have the Thursday and Friday, the opening rounds of the women's tournament. We have the NCAA tournament, and thank God we have the NCAA tournament.
What? How many other things do they roll in TVs to school for kids to watch during the school day? It is literally that, and that's
distinct,
it.
Distinct memories of that TV on the cart. The kids yep. listening to this do not know what we're talking about, but the you know, then it was always set on VCR mode, and then the teacher didn't know how to get it off the VCR. You don't know what a VCR is. It's not it's not where Shaka Smart started coaching. It's not. Brenna, we've got to get out of here because there are other people who want to record podcasts at the Oregonian. We've got to get out of their way. I want to say we are two episodes in to the Brenna and Bill version of the Oregonian Sports Podcast. I think we're doing pretty well.
We're cooking with gas, baby.
All right. Well, thanks to Brenna Green from COIN for her continued excellence and participation. I am Bill Oram. We will be back next week or sooner. There could be more. We can just feel the need to get back at you depending on what happens with Oregon State, the Pilots.
Yep.
We may need to come back sooner than next week, but if not, we'll talk to you next week about all things happening. We're going to have some clarity on a lot of these issues we've been talking about. Continue to listen to all the Oregonian sports podcasts, Blazer Focus, Beaver Banner, Duck Confidential, of course, Soccer Made in Portland. I'm Bill Oram. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you soon.